WFXX. Once again,
the Fox, your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox.
Well, we had all those really nice days. Come on, folks. We were due, right? We were due. Wet, gray, and gloomy. We'll see what we can do about the gloomy part, all right? Friends, welcome. Let's talk here for a Wednesday morning. Scott Giese with you. Our friend, the Ironhead Jeff Byers, will join us a little later on. He and the little guy have an errand to run this morning. Oh, I remember those days. I do. Parent duty, all right? He's got something to do. He'll be joining us in just a little bit, so no worries there. If somehow you haven't been outside yet this morning, it's, we got some rain last night into this morning. Much needed, all right? We needed some moisture. Now, I tell you what, if you haven't already checked this out this morning, pay attention. Now, this is not tonight. This would be tomorrow night into Friday morning. National Weather Service has already put out a freeze watch for the neighborhood from late tomorrow night into, I think, like 8 or 9 a.m. Friday morning. Is there a possibility, now depending on where you are, is there a possibility that early Friday morning temperatures could actually get down to 32. That'd be freezing. Well, maybe. All right. And so the freeze watch has been issued. Now, again, not today. This is tomorrow night into Friday. So if you're, you know, you got those plants and you want to bring them in and you're, you know, all that sort of thing. Of course, if you have plants in the ground, I would suggest not digging them up. All right. That would not be a wise move. But keep in mind for tomorrow night into Friday. Yes, it is very autumn-like this morning. Well, it is autumn, folks. It's October, so there we go. All right, so watch out for that. All right, we got a busy program today. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to be joined by our friend Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA. We've had Stephen on before. He covers the state legislature, the governor, Harrisburg, and all that sort of thing. And, of course, we have lots of questions for him. Because if I count correctly, today is day number 100 with no new state budget. Where's my bell? Wait a minute. Do I want to ring the bell for that? No, I'm not ringing the bell for that. 100 days. Remember, June 30. It's October. So we're going to get the scoop on from Stephen. Okay, what's going on? What's not going on down there? Are they close? Are they miles away? What's the deal? Questions about what's the governor doing? We have an election, folks, in just 4 weeks. All right, let's ring the bell for that one. We have an election coming up in 4 weeks. And the state judge retention elections have been getting a lot of publicity, a lot of money spending. What is going on with some of that stuff? So we got lots and lots of questions for Stephen. We'll be talking to him around 9 o'clock or so. Now, if you were listening yesterday, we had a guest scheduled for yesterday, Frank Parlato, who's an investigative journalist on a lot of different things, but he's been digging into the Jerry Sandusky case for the last, a couple of years now. And if you recall, last week, Sandusky and his group, once again, they're filing an appeal. They want a new trial. They claim they have some new evidence. Well, we figure Frank knows what the new evidence is. Yesterday we had a good old-fashioned miscommunication. All right, that's about the best way to put it. We had two things not going in the same direction. Frank was supposed to join us and had an oops. Okay, hey, it's life. Sometimes that happens. So we've rescheduled and we are now planning to talk to Frank tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So if you want to get hear the latest on what's going on with that case, yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff. Frank Parlato is scheduled to join us tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So mark that down, I guess, on your schedule. All right, news and notes here for a Wednesday morning. Yes, sad news. Yesterday we found out that our friend Ron Bracken passed away yesterday. Ron was 81. Now, if you are older, all right, and you remember when it was a newspaper, the paper part, Ron was a stalwart of the Center Daily Times, I didn't even realize this, 41 years. He was a sports writer for the CDT. I knew Ron. I mean, anybody around here who's been on the beat, let's see, Ron retired like 16 years ago, I think. So you got to go back further than that. But anybody that was on, you know, the Penn State beat or maybe the high school sports beat and so on, you either knew Ron or you bumped into Ron and so on. He was, I mean, the accolades have been coming in since yesterday. He was a one of a kind. He really was. I mean, that's an easy line to, again, to throw out, except when you really are. And Ron really was. He was an outstanding writer. He covered so many different things on the high school front, on the Penn State front, big on the wrestling front. He is in more halls of fame than most professional athletes are. I mean, it's like six or seven of them. I mean, Ron was just really good for a long time at what he did. And that was covering Penn State sports, Penn State football, Joe Paterno, Penn State wrestling, high school football, other sports as well. I mean, this when I saw the announcement yesterday, I didn't cry, but I just had that thought that, I mean, there goes another one that just reminds me of what could be called the good old days, because they were. I mean, journalism, local journalism and such was, it was just different back then. But there was a friendship, at least among the sports beat people, and Ron was a real pro. And I thought of Ron, and I thought of Doug McDonald, another stalwart from the old days from the Center Daily Times who passed away not too long ago. Saw one blurb online yesterday. Somebody mentioned Ronnie Crist. Ronnie Crist was just a terrific sports writer for the Harrisburg Patriot News. And between Ron and Doug and Ronnie and you know, those of us that are a bit older, those were good days. Those were really good days. And so, I don't know, somewhere I'm going to mention something. Some of you will get it. Some of you will not. But somewhere up there, T. Wes Brillick right now is popping open a Utica club, and he's sitting back and he's enjoying himself. All right? If you want to look up T. Wes Brillick, go right ahead. That goes back a few years. All right? So Ron will absolutely be missed. Again, he retired, I think, like 15, 16 years ago. Although occasionally he would come out and he would cover a story about wrestling or something else, local, you know, something around here. And he would be inducted into another Hall of Fame because he was that good. And so our condolences to Ron's family and friends. I'm sorry for any of the contemporary, you know, sports beat people and so on. They don't make them like Ron. They just don't. So that is sad. That's very sad. Ron passing away at the age of 81. All right, let's go over some other things. All right, folks, we're living in crazy times. We're living in dangerous times. All right, you pick the one you like. All right, I mean, this, we haven't talked about this. This story involving Mark Sanchez is bizarre. All right, Mark Sanchez, former NFL quarterback. If you can remember, I think he had a big win against Penn State one time. He didn't have a long NFL career, but then he switched over to broadcasting and working for Fox Sports. As far as I know, Fox TV Sports, not the radio. All right, we've got the radio, obviously. This is Fox TV Sports. But something happened, I guess, in Indianapolis over the weekend where Sanchez and a 69-year-old truck driver got into it somehow. This apparently was late at night. Allegedly, maybe Sanchez had been doing some imbibing that night. And I think it was Saturday night. And these two men, I mean, the other guy was a truck driver, and it was late at night, and I guess the truck driver was trying to find a parking space for his truck, And he got into it with Sanchez, and fisticuffs or whatever ensued. The truck driver apparently had a knife and stabbed Sanchez. So when I first saw this story, my thought was, oh, man, that truck driver's in big trouble. No, apparently Sanchez is the guy in big trouble, because apparently he, according to the accusation, he started it. He instigated this fight with the truck driver over a parking space. And so now the truck driver, already in record time, maybe not really, is suing, all right, suing Sanchez. Let's see, it says here, leading to severe permanent disfigurement, loss of function, other injuries, and emotional distress. Okay. Now, the thing yesterday that caught my eye or my ear is this truck driver, he's suing Sanchez. Okay, I can get that. He's also suing Fox. Now, to my knowledge, Fox had nothing to do with whatever happened in this parking space on Saturday night. Nothing. Absolutely zip zilch. Nothing to do with it. Okay? So why sue Fox? Well, that's Sanchez's employer. Well, who cares? All right? If I go out and do something stupid today and somebody wants to sue me, that doesn't mean they should sue my boss or sue the owner of the radio station here. No. Of course, Fox has money. Fox has money. And so, again, in record time, again, not really, a lawyer just waiting jumps on this, sees an opportunity, does a big lawsuit, not only against the alleged perpetrator, but against his company, because his company has lots and lots of money. It's like, okay, I don't know why I'm ringing the bell, but this is another one where you just want to punch out a lawyer. Like, no. If your client has a beef, he has a beef against Mark Sanchez. Right there, boom. Sanchez actually had to go to the hospital. Again, he got stabbed by the truck driver, who I guess was defending himself. Okay. So if you got a beef, your beef is with Mark Sanchez, not with Fox. And so I want to see where this one goes. It'll probably take some time. Will Fox eventually be removed from the lawsuit because they have no business being there? That'll be interesting. Or will this lawyer be overzealous and keep pushing because, of course, he wants to get money for his client and for himself, all right, or herself. I'm going to follow that one. Let's see where this one goes. It's just, you know, I assume Sanchez is no longer employed by Fox, because this is bad news. And so watch this one. Let's just watch this one. It's kind of bizarre. See where it goes. All right, we've mentioned this is Nobel Prize Week. All right, we'll ring the bell for that. The folks over in Sweden, the Nobel Committee, every day this week they announce a prize. Today it's the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, given to three men, Susumu Kitagawa, Richard Robson, and Omar Yahi, for the development of a new type of molecular architecture. Once again, folks, I have no idea what that means. I don't know. It's something with chemistry. It sounds really deep, and I'm sure it's really important. I have no idea what that is. If you, by the way, our phone number, 814-954-7266. If you know what development of a new type of molecular architecture means, I'm all ears. If you want to call in and tell me, I'm just like, what the heck is that? I have no idea. Once again, the Nobel Peace Prize will be announced on Friday. It'll be announced on Friday, all right? And could it be Donald Trump? I actually saw a story yesterday, or maybe last night, essentially saying, could Trump actually win the Peace Prize? Yes, he could. Well, yes, he could. All right. So the question is, would the Nobel Committee be brave enough to give it to him? It's totally their call. All right. Totally their call. So I don't know. We'll have to stay tuned for that. They announced the, now again, this is Sweden. Sweden is, I don't know, 6 hours ahead of us or something like that. And so Eastern time, these awards get announced like around 6 o'clock in the morning, our time. I think around noon or so, their time. So by Friday, by the time we come on Friday morning, we should know who the Peace Prize winner is. And again, if it's Trump, a warning to hospitals and clinics out there for a heart attack alert on Friday. All right, just prepare the emergency room and get ready for all those folks that are going to go apoplectic if Trump somehow wins the Peace Prize. Let's take a quick call here, and good morning. You're live on Let's Talk.
Hey,
do you know what the molecular architecture is?
I'm okay on Jeff, running the kid who was a little late getting out of bed because it's a gray fall day and he's confused about the change in season. But, yeah, I'm kind of remembering a fellow named Rustin Roy at Penn State.
Okay.
And he brought a program to Penn State. It was the best in the world when he was leading it.
I remember that name, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was called Material Science. So it gets into this nanotechnology and laying down. Basically, I think it's silica, but I'm wondering if this has something to do with these computer chips and making them more, more efficient in terms of the transfer of information or energy, whatever silica does or whatever these chips do. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has something to do with material science and making all our computer systems.
Well, I'm looking at a headline here, and it mentions metal organic frameworks. So it's some kind of combination of organic and metal.
That's an integration. Yeah, that's an integration of silica and biology.
Yeah, how about that?
So that gets you to that weird conversation about being a cyborg.
or Cylon. There we go.
Well, yes. You know, the thing is, as a kid, like, we grew up, we couldn't wait to get into a car. And I remember reading about how that changes your perspective when you drive past your neighbor going 60 miles an hour and you try to say hello to him.
okay.
And now we've got these phones. I have one in hand right now. And and you refer, it's not just about the phone. It's about, okay, I just heard a word I don't understand. I just heard a whole sentence in a different language. Now these phones can translate that. It can give you a definition. Then the next question is, can we take it out of the hand and integrate it straight into behind the eye and into the mind? So it may have something to do with that. I guess we'll find out here. That would be cyborg, right?
Very sci-fi like, yes. I don't know. I'll have to dig into it more. It just sounds really sci-fi like.
Well, I love my technologist, but I think when you try to integrate the technologies into the biology is going to reject it. Because that's what the biology does. The biology says this is a foreign thing. I'm going to use my immune system. So the only way you can incorporate it is just like if you get a prosthetic or you get an artificial organ, or not, excuse me, you get a donated organ, you got to turn the immune system off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem with turning the immune system off is you have no immune system. Then you're relying on all the drugs to compensate. So I think this stuff's going to fail, but unfortunately, I think we're going to suffer as a society, trying to experiment with it.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, if you're a longtime listener, Scott here, I have a cochlear implant right above my right ear, because I've been dealing with hearing issues for a while, and I finally had my surgery about a year and a half ago, and it allows me to hear. Which is great. And it's inside my skull, not my skull, inside my, well, I guess it is skull, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they hooked it up to the cochlear nerve, which allows me to hear. Now, it's not the same as traditional hearing, but, hey, I get to hear things. And I am all for that. All right? So there's a success. So I don't know if it's something along those lines. It fits. It works.
Yeah. Well, I think it will be along those lines. So basically you have these little hairs, right? And they vibrate. And they have a mechanical thing that becomes... I can't explain it. I'm not a biochemist.
Well, no, my cochlear implant bypasses my ear. It goes right past. It goes straight to the cochlear nerve. It goes right past those hairs you were talking about, because that's where my problem is.
Right. So you go behind the sensor, and you go right into the electrical transmission.
Just straight to the brain, yeah.
Right. So I'm sure there was probably a period where you had to adapt to it. But yeah, I think, yeah, we're talking about similar things.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Appreciate your call.
Hey, I wanted to talk about Ron too, though. Like you say, it's been a long time since I've read anything, but I recall him. He was the guy who would write the personal stories about the athletes rather than the whole sports team and whether they won the last game, blah, blah, blah. I may be wrong on this, but I think he gave that kind of personal storytelling of the athletes and their, you know, people love that sort of thing. And I was hoping there was that one young fellow on your sports show, and he was working with, I think, a volleyball player. And I think they were trying to bring that type of storytelling about the Penn State athletes. Again, I think that's a winner, that type of journalism. But I just wanted to leave you with that.
All right.
Okay, take care.
All right, appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Yeah, some interesting thoughts there. Organic metal. Folks, this is way over my head. I don't have a clue. And actually, it's kind of weird. As we were talking with the caller there, we have a nice big window here in our studio, and I just saw four deer go flying right past our window, which is, okay, it must be autumn because the deer are on the run, although I'm really shocked that I'm seeing deer on Science Park Road. All right, that's really crazy. Let's see. I tell you what, let's take a break right there because I see our buddy, the Ironhead, is here because we got a sports update coming up. Again, what's going on in Harrisburg? Oh, great. Day 100. So we're going to get some details on that in the next hour. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We'll take a break. Don't go anywhere. We will come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. The Fox Sports Weekend.
Is your Sunday home for the National Football League. All of the big teams.
Spins into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Big names.
Burrow throws over the middle into coverage, and it is caught. Unbelievable.
It's the NFL. Sundays
on Central PA Sports Authority.
The Fox Sports Weekend. Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox. Fox Sports.
You know, a hotel's just a hotel, but a house is a home. Decorated to perfection with pride, love, and attention to detail. That's what you'll experience when you stay at the Keller House.
A delightful 1887 home in the village of Center Hall, Pennsylvania.
The Keller House is not just a bed and breakfast. The moment you open the door, you'll be amazed at the historic, unique, cozy feel of this beautiful Victorian home. The Keller House is just minutes away from State College. So if you're going to the game, turn your trip into a mini vacation. The Keller House Bed and Breakfast. Oh, and did I mention the delicious homemade cooked breakfasts? So good. Plus, you can choose from one of five themed bedrooms, each with its own bathroom and a central sitting room downstairs. Wireless high-speed internet is also provided. So, whether you're by yourself or bringing the whole family, the Keller House Bed and Breakfast in Center Hall will be your home away from home. KellerHouseBB.com. That's KellerHouseBB.com. 109 West Church Street, Center Hall.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines. The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails. Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Well, there we are, right smack dab in the middle of the week. It is a Wednesday edition of Let's Talk. Jeff and Scott with you, and let's take a check of sports,
okay,
shall we? This week just keeps getting worse. Yankees, what? More on that
later.
Coming up. Doggone it. I mean, I was all ready to enjoy at least a moment of the sports week. Thank you, Penguins. More on that coming up. Penn State football trying to get back on the winning track this week. It is homecoming as the Nittany Lions will take on Northwestern. That'll be a 3:30 kickoff at Beaver Stadium on Saturday afternoon. The Nittany Lions are 3-2. And I am going to say Penn State's chances of making the playoffs.
Yes.
Include a, you have to beat Northwestern. That's just me. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, in order to make the playoffs, this is a game they have to win. It could be just me.
Thank you very much, yes.
But that's my analysis. I think if they lose this game,
right on,
there's like a really good chance that they're not going to make the playoffs here at the end of the year. Penn State men's hockey will play its home opener tomorrow night against Clarkson. Nittany Lions learning yesterday that sophomore forward Charlie Serrato has been named the Big Ten's first star of the week, meaning he was the best player in the conference of the opening weekend. In his first two games, he scored a couple of goals and had four assists for a six-point weekend in the Nittany Lions wins over Arizona State. By the way, he was a plus four on the ice. It's pretty good, to start the season. Penn State men's golf team tying for eighth place in the 15-team field at the Cullen Brown Collegiate in Lexington, Kentucky. That tournament shortened to just the two rounds. Play yesterday got called off due to inclement weather. So Mississippi State wins the event with an 11 under par. Penn State finishing at 5 over. Junior Alex Cremian leading Penn State with a tie for 12th individually at 2 under. Freshman Jackson Cerrone and senior Andres Barraza also tied for 14th, both shooting 1 under for the two rounds that were completed. Penn State women's golf team finishing in a three-way tie for third in the 15-team field at the Mercedes-Benz Intercollegiate in Tennessee. The host Volunteers winning that event, shooting 13 under par. Oregon State was 4 under, and then Penn State tied Chattanooga and Western Kentucky at 6 over par for third. The Nittany Lions finishing strong, shooting 2 under over the final 8 holes of the tournament. Freshman Audrey Lamb leading Penn State, going 1 under for the tournament for a tie for 13th individually. Sophomore Hannah Rabb tied for 17th with a 1 over score for the tournament. The Penn State men's basketball team will have 15 of its games in the upcoming season televised by the Big Ten Network. 6 games will be on Peacock, and 6 games will be on FS1. True TV
will also have one of Penn State's game. True TV will televise the November 22nd contest between the Nittany Lions and Providence. So you can look forward to that and mark your TV viewing habits accordingly. You can go to gopsusports.com to get all of the television schedule and the updated times for the tip-offs of the games in the upcoming season. It's going to be an interesting season for the Nittany Lion basketball program. Very young but very talented roster, and see if Mike Rhodes can make some headway here in the very tough Big Ten Conference.
Is it just me?
Probably.
More games are navigating to Peacock and things like
that. There is a lot of Peacock.
Really?
There's
is
no
it just
doubt about
me?
That.
The
streaming
we kind
services.
Of predicted
yep.
It's going to go streaming.
Yeah.
Which means you got to pay extra money if you want to see that stuff.
And
there it is.
Not happy.
Okay.
Yep, that's just me.
Let's move.
Also, JV football from Monday night. It was Belfont shutting out Phillipsburg Osceola by a final of 21-0. Let's see. Doggone it. I mean, I was so ready to celebrate. Blue Jays jump out big early.
Yeah,
I'm
6-1.
Here we go, baby. And then, Aaron Judge. This guy's like good and stuff, and it's
yeah,
really
he's good.
When you don't like the team, it's nothing against Aaron Judge, but come on, man, let us enjoy the Yankees getting destroyed. No, Aaron Judge won't let that happen. He is having himself a series. Had a 3-run homer that tied the game. The Yankees go on to the 9-6. Victory after trailing 6-1. So that's like somewhere around 8 runs consecutively that the Yankees scored unanswered.
Sorry.
I have a friend. Just a quick note on unanswered.
You have a friend. Wow.
I do.
Okay.
And I think he's even willing to acknowledge it. But said friend has confided in us that when he was younger, when he heard like 21 unanswered points or 5 unanswered runs, he thought that meant the other team just has no answers. They keep scoring runs or touchdowns, and we just have no answers.
Well,
he didn't realize that it wasn't like that nobody broke up the scoring on the other side. He's like, no, I just thought it was unanswered. It was like, yeah, we have no answers. We can't stop them.
Well, during that stretch, they didn't have
any
answers.
Yeah, I suppose to a degree that is the case. The Blue Jays certainly did not have any answers down the stretch in last night's game. Again, the Yankees win at 9-6, and they're still alive, darn it, in the American League Divisional Series. Toronto still up 2-1 in that series. The Mariners, meanwhile, doubled up on the Tigers, 8-4, and so Seattle has taken a 2-1 lead in that best-of-5 series. Game 4 in both of those series will be coming up today, right? Yeah, today. Also today, the Philadelphia Phillies needing a win.
Oh, boy.
Maybe the Yankees gave them the blueprint. The Phillies will be at the Dodgers. L.A. leads the series 2-0. Philadelphia trying to extend the series, needing a win tonight to do so. It'll be a 9:08 start. Aaron Nola will get this call for Philadelphia. The Brewers are also ready to break out the brooms. They lead the Cubs 2-0. Game 3 in that series will be at 5:08 this afternoon. Game 4 of the Mariners-Tigers series will get underway in Detroit at 3:08, and the Blue Jays and Yankees Game 4 at Yankee Stadium set to begin at 7:08 because that's the way we do it in postseason baseball. Ladies and gentlemen, the question must be asked. Will the Penguins give up a goal this season. They are on pace to become the first team in NHL history to not allow an opponent to score. It's never been done before.
Yeah, no kidding.
Penguins won 3-0. It was a fun opening night against Mike Sullivan and the New York Rangers. Penguins get the 3-0 victory. Had it on the bat. We were doing some other things, and we were keeping tabs on it pretty well. It was a good outing. Jenny Malkin had a couple of assists for the beloved Penguins. Ryan Shea had an assist. Penguins, they were good. Not great. But it was a good, solid effort.
It needed to be good.
Rangers, I'll be curious to see how this season develops. They're working on some things. Justin Brazow had a couple of goals for Pittsburgh. Blake Lizotte had the third goal for Pittsburgh. And the Penguins are undefeated and unscored upon this entire season.
Well, I tell you, if you go back a little bit, like the preseason schedule, they've won 6 in a row now. They've won 6 straight games.
I don't think those preseason games
I realize that, but they've won 6 straight.
Yeah.
That counts for something.
Does it?
Yeah, well, not officially, but it's like this team can play. Although I watched the game last night. Yeah. I mean, it was 1-0. They had 2 empty netters at the end of the game.
Yes.
All right, so it was a 1-0 that turned into a 3-0.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the guys' names, like, okay,
it's a lot of new faces.
And I saw a couple of their kids. There's no other word. They're kids. You know, we talk about Sid the Kid, Sidney Crosby. I think they should change that to Sid and some kids.
Well, how about
it? I mean, they got an 18-year-old and... Okay, did I read that right? Is one kid... No, I mean, he's probably 19 years old. And he's in the NHL. So all this talk about Gavin McKenna, Penn State, you know, la la. McKenna right now is 17 years old. And allegedly first pick next year, blah,
17.
Blah, blah. He could, I mean, there was,
nuts.
I mean, this one kid, he looked like he's straight out of junior high.
Yeah. No, they do have some
like,
baby
who's
faces.
He? I don't know. Holy mackerel. So I got to pay attention closer to the Penguins lineup.
Dan Muse is the new coach. It's a new world for the Penguins this season, but off to a good start, and we will take that. Flyers will get their season underway, tomorrow night. And listen, I know there are folks upset about Penn State football and these last couple of losses and all of that. But apparently there is now a group that is taking to the streets to protest tailgating, and I don't understand this. We were coming back. I had some business to do out on 322 over the weekend. And coming back from Seven Mountains, there are these signs that are saying no tailgating. Do not tailgate. And apparently they're even threatening penalties if they catch you tailgating. Now, this is right on the route that people are going to the game from out of town. And I'm just telling you, I find it outrageous.
Hold on.
You know, if we're not allowed to enjoy the games, and they have been tough games to enjoy the last couple of weeks, at least let us enjoy the tailgating experience out in the parking lots.
Wait a minute.
Geezy, I'm sorry. This is just outrageous.
Hold on. I think...
Stop with the anti-tailgating sentiment out there.
I think they're referring to when you are driving too closely to the person in front of you.
Oh.
That's called tailgating.
Well, you shouldn't do that.
Well, no.
that would be dangerous.
Hence the signs. All right.
Oh.
You shouldn't do that.
Well,
I think that's
never
what
mind.
They're talking about.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
Although maybe from the last 2 weeks, it does have a different meaning.
Well, I'm telling you. There's just... all right. Well, I feel better about that.
There you go. You're good.
And that is what I have from the world of sports.
All right,
unless
one,
I missed something.
One quick thing before we take a break.
Yes.
All right. Now, this isn't this week. Recently, Wall Street Journal has a story. And Wall Street Journal does more than just like crunch financial numbers. And
they're always posting stories. Have you noticed that?
Yes, yes, they are.
Yeah.
The story says that in the NFL, maybe not college football, you know, and so on.
That's the National Football League.
That one, yes. Mm-hmm. Is the punt, you're familiar with that play, the punt, is the punt dying?
Oh, punt.
Apparently, right now, through the first few weeks of the season, NFL teams are averaging less than 4 punts per game. That has never happened before. There are fewer punts now in NFL games than apparently ever before. And the Wall Street Journal story mentions 3 things. First off, again, the kickoff rules. Remember, they got changed like a year or two ago.
I recall.
And now a lot of offenses, when they start and they get a kick and so on, they're starting in better field position than they used to do in the past.
Well, yeah, unless you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, then you just give the ball to the other team and give away a
score. That happened once.
Right. But yeah, in theory, I mean, and yes. You know, most of the teams, that's what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, coaches are increasingly willing to go for it on 4th down. Now, that could be the tush push, but even beyond the tush push, seemingly coaches are like 4th and 3. Yeah, let's go for it. Interesting. And have you seen some of these field goals? The field goal kickers, I don't know what they're doing, if it's slipping something in the Gatorade or whatever it is, they're going for longer kicks, and they're making a decent number of them. And so in the old days, you got to kick over 50 yards, you know, good luck with that. Now it's more like 60. Yeah, okay, let's go for it. 60-yard field goal? Okay, let's try it.
It is bonkers the way the field goal game has changed here just in the last year or two.
Yeah.
I mean, the willingness to try and then the consistency with which guys are hitting from within 60 is it's kind of breathtaking.
It's amazing, yeah. It's like, how did that happen? Is it diet? Is it exercise? Is it strength training? Like, what the heck? So there are fewer punts in the NFL. Now, I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. Makes the game a little more exciting?
Yeah, I think so.
And let's see if that trickles down to the college football level. Because obviously, before the NFL, these guys played in college, different positions and so on. Apparently, Wall Street Journal didn't say anything about college football, like fewer punts in college football. But in the pros, less than 4 per game. And that's rather interesting. That's rather startling. So watch out for that. And NFL game tomorrow night, games this weekend, of course. Watch for the punt or watch for the 4th down calls. All right, there you go. And coaches are just getting a little more ambitious when it comes to 4th down. Very interesting. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll have an open line segment. Again, coming up at 9 o'clock, Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA covers Harrisburg. What on earth is going on down there?
Everything's just running smoothly. Everybody's getting along, working on behalf of the citizens. It's really just a feel-good story of the year, isn't it?
Boy, are you about to be woken up.
Huh? Is that not what's happening?
That's coming up in about 20 minutes. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.7 The Fox. Don't go anywhere. We'll come right back.
We don't just talk sports. We live it. Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Be a part of the best event of the winter. Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with sci-fi and fantasy fans from across the region. If you're a vendor of anything looking to reach this energized audience, open space is currently available. Go to happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the vendors tab for information. Reserve your space today and get ready for a weekend of action and profit. happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the vendors tab. Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand Multi-Force stand-ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Join us for the Goon and Ironhead Show, Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Goon loves Philadelphia sports. I love Pittsburgh sports. We both love Penn State sports, and we both just like talking sports, and you never know where the discussion will take us. That's part of the fun. Join us for the good times, Tuesday and Thursday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
You know, a hotel's just a hotel, but a house is a home, decorated to perfection with pride, love, and attention to detail. That's what you'll experience when you stay at the Keller House, a delightful 1887 home in the village of Center Hall, Pennsylvania. The Keller House is not just a bed and breakfast. The moment you open the door, you'll be amazed at the historic, unique, cozy feel of this beautiful Victorian home. The Keller House is just minutes away from State College, so if you're going to the game, turn your trip into a mini vacation. The Keller House Bed and Breakfast. Oh, did I mention the delicious homemade cooked breakfasts? So good. Plus, you can choose from one of five themed bedrooms, each with its own bathroom and a central sitting room downstairs. Wireless high-speed internet is also provided. So, whether you're by yourself or bringing the whole family, the Keller House Bed and Breakfast in Center Hall will be your home away from home. KellerHouseBB.com. That's KellerHouseBB.com. 109 West Church Street, Center Hall.
Now a fraternity or sorority is a brotherhood or sisterhood formed around common goals and aspirations. These men and women make a commitment to each other for life. The members that form a fraternity or sorority share their efforts, friendship, and knowledge, but they should never, ever look the same. That's why there's PAMP, Printing and More Printing. All kinds of t-shirts for all of your group's events, with the artwork as wild as... artwork as visually stimulating as your mind's eye sees it.
For quality you can see and wear, remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
Oh, a little funky cold Medina. That hits the spot on a Wednesday morning. Am I right or am I right? Phone line is open. A little open phone time here at 814-954-7266 if you wish to join the program and weigh in on, well, just about anything. I don't know if it's, you know, maybe just my circle of friends, but it seems like a couple of folks out there have some thoughts on Penn State football still.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's the darndest thing. And not everybody seems to think everything is going swimmingly within the program. Not everybody is altogether thrilled with the coaching staff. I'm noticing. I don't know if you've picked up on this week, but yeah. I've sensed a little bit of a trend in comments, conversations, writings that we've had. I know you touched on it. Had to get the kiddo to an orthodontics appointment this morning. So my apologies for missing the first segment. But Ron Bracken was a wonderful friend on top of everything else. I got to know Ron when I first started covering Penn State and at that time high school sports for WRSC in the late 80s. And again, you touch on it. They really were the good old days in that there were just a ton of people in local media all working to dig up stories and get different angles on things, but it was, you know, it was friendly competition. We forged a lot of great friendships over the years, and then I stayed in touch here and there with Ron after he retired. I reached out to him on a couple of different stories that I was working on, and he reached out on a Penn State item that he was working on for a particular story. And then we really reconnected. He was on the Center County Sports Hall of Fame board, which I'm very privileged to be on, and so we worked together for a few years on the board, and the wealth of knowledge between that we have lost in this community over the last couple of years on the sports front. I dare say, I know Steve Jones is right up there, but I don't think anybody knew as much about Penn State athletics as Lou Pronto. And I'm not sure there's anybody that knows as much about Center County sports as Ron Bracken. The stories and the history that he had with the different programs, different coaches, athletes, and the stories he could tell, and that, you know, this kid went on there, and this kid did that, and man, this game was covered a lot of big time local football games, wrestling meets, other events. Probably best known for his football and wrestling coverage, and yeah, T. West Brillick. The two things that I will miss most about Ron, and I'll miss many things, but his wealth of knowledge really was just a valuable asset for our sports community. And his wit was right up there. Just a very dry, he would throw out a line and it's like, wait, what did you just say? and he'd just get this wry smile. It's like, yeah. just a wonderful sense of humor. And I always thought just a great perspective on sports, you know, both the importance that they play in a community and the overall insignificance of sports in the overall scheme of things. I loved his perspective on all of those things as well. So, yeah, Ron Bracken will be dearly missed, and is just one of those individuals that is irreplaceable. And that staff they had for a while at the Center Daily Times with Doug McDonald, Ron Bracken, when I was coming in, Johnny Severance, who I still keep in touch with. There were just, and I'm going to end up leaving some names out, and I'm not intending to. It was, they had an incredible staff at the time. Again, we had just a plethora of radio reporters working for various entities, and a lot of us would get together, and occasionally, you know, once in a blue moon, one of us would crack open an adult beverage.
No.
This, you know, every now and then, this was known to happen.
Scandal.
Back in those days. And, yeah, we just had, shared a lot of good times, a lot of laughs, a lot of wonderful memories of those days. And, again, Ron will be sorely missed by the Center County sports community. And very sorry that he won't be with us, obviously, for the Center County Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony, which is coming up. He's already in. It wasn't he wasn't part of this class. He's been in for a while. But sorry that he won't be able to join us, because it was always nice catching up with him at that event, if nowhere else. And that event will be a week from Sunday. And, yes, we will be talking a little bit at that event about the tremendous impact that Ron Bracken has left us on the Center County sports scene.
I'm getting that aging feeling again.
Oh, I'm telling you, it is. Yeah, these last few years have just been
rough,
brutal.
Respects. Yeah, good friends, good people. You know, it's interesting what sticks with you. I can't remember when this was. I'm thinking it was the early 90s sometime. My wife and I are on vacation in Ocean City, Maryland. And I think our oldest daughter was a little one at that time. And we're walking down the boardwalk. If you've ever been to Ocean City, Maryland, famous boardwalk there. Lots of businesses and hotels and townhouses where people could stay and stuff like that. Now, this is at least 30 years ago. And we're walking down the boardwalk just, you know, one evening, and beautiful evening. And I walk past this, like, big, like, townhouse-type place. And who comes walking out the door but Ron Bracken? Comes walking out the door. And I'm like, Ron. He's like, Scott, what are you doing here? It's like, we're on vacation. Well, so are we. Okay. All right, we're hours and hours away from Center County. And it's like we bump into each other in Ocean City, Maryland. We chatted just very briefly, yeah. And then we kind of, you know, went our separate ways that particular evening. But Ron was a good man. And you're
really
right.
Good guy.
The knowledge. I know that he did some, I don't know, what do you call them, oral histories or he did some, he didn't do the stories. The stories were sort of with him in recent years about Penn State football and about wrestling. He was big into wrestling and all this other stuff. And I think some Penn State people did some oral histories or whatever with Ron. Don't lose that, please. Make sure that never gets lost.
Yeah.
Because, again, the media today, it's just not the same as it was back in the day. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
No.
I mean, the story, you know, Ron wrote some really long, really good stories, not just about teams and events, but about people. And you still see some of those stories out there. I'm going to salute my friend Haley Kynes, my former basketball protege, and she'll never own up to that, but I won't either. She wrote a really nice CDT remembrance of Ron, which came out, I guess, this morning, and talked to a lot of people, obviously, yesterday to get some remembrances about Ron and his background and what he did and all that sort of thing. Feel free to, you know, check out that story, centerdaily.com. Probably it's at the top of the list of stories. I mean, the whole newspaper business, there's no more paper. You know, I mean, Ron was a storyteller, first and foremost. And you don't really need a paper to tell a story, but still, it's just different. And I don't know, maybe Ron kind of shook his head over the years like, I'm not sure I could do it this time in this particular current era. It's just not like the days when you got the presses and they ran at night and you had a deadline to get in and you had to get your story in by 11 so that it got in the next morning's paper and the pressmen running the presses and all the ink stains and the smells and all that. It's all gone. And that's, for an oldster, that'd be me, that's sad. That's just sad. Digital's nice, but it's just not the same. Anyway.
Nope, that's not.
All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, well, more reasons to get aggravated. All right, here we go. What the heck is going on in Harrisburg? Or what isn't going on in Harrisburg? State budgets. Upcoming elections, folks, election day, 4 weeks off. All right. Hello. And some other things down that way.
Dude, that's just an off-season election.
Right. Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA is scheduled to join us. He covers this stuff deeply, and we love Stephen because he has a sense of humor. So this should be a fun interview.
Oh, yeah.
Stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.7 The Fox. Let's take a break. We'll come right back.
Sports Radio.
Bigger and better than ever, it's the 2026 Happy Valley Comic Convention, February 28th and March 1st at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with special guest Tricia Helfer, the gorgeous Cylon from Battlestar Galactica, and Tracy Coco from Star Trek, along with actors from Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and other Japanese series. Collectibles, discussions, artist costume contest, and much more. Get your tickets starting now at $8 at HappyValleyComicCon.com. Kids 10 and under free on Sunday. HappyValleyComicCon.com. Made possible by a grant from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-On, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox.
Everybody's happy on a Wednesday morning. Am I right? I mean, the happiness here in Happy Valley, you can just feel it. State government's running smoothly. Penn State football on its way to a national title. Happiness, the theme of the morning. What else could we play but happy coming back out of the break?
Have you seen the weather outside?
Are you kidding me?
Not very happy.
Beautiful day, weather-wise, nurturing rain.
Welcome to Dreamland. Okay, there we go. Dreamland, where everything happens on time.
Hello? Is this on? Hello?
We'll have a little open line time toward the end of the hour.
Yeah.
Right now, let's welcome back our friend Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA, who covers everything Harrisburg for those fine folks. Stephen, first off, good morning. Thanks for putting up with us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. Always happy to be here and talk about Harrisburg.
Okay. All right, he's obviously getting paid, so there we go. Let's jump right into it, okay? Let's stop, because I'm sure we have many new listeners. We always have new listeners. Stephen, do us a favor. Tell us about yourself again, your background. What do you do for Spotlight PA? Maybe tell us about Spotlight PA, because you guys are great. Tell us about you. Go.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been covering Harrisburg for about 7 years now. I've been at Spotlight for about four. Spotlight PA covers state government, particularly the legislature and the governor. That's my focus. We also cover some of the agencies. We also cover, you know, we have county bureaus in State College and in Berks County. We're always trying to expand. The goal is to do investigative reporting or just accountability reporting focused on, you know, what are people with power actually doing? And that's what I do in Harrisburg. And, well, let me tell you, there's a lot of things that aren't getting done in Harrisburg. That's been more of the story recently.
Okay.
I'll bet it feels a lot longer than 7 years that you've been covering Harrisburg.
It's funny you say that, because I actually literally had a conversation with someone yesterday where they kind of stopped me, and they're like, how long have you been doing this? And I kind of like looked at them and said, is that a question because you think I haven't been doing it long enough, or you think I've been doing it for too long?
Okay. Website, spotlightpa.org. Again, these folks do really good stuff. All right. All right. Now, Stephen, if I count, you might need to cue up the happy music again.
Yeah.
If I count correctly, today is day number 100 without a new state budget. I think
that
I correct. Is that right?
I'll be honest. I did have to use the Google how many days since. So, like, unless Google was counting it wrong, and that's always a possibility. I don't always trust them. But, you know, yeah, 100 days.
Day 100. Now, normally 100 we celebrate, you know, like, oh, that's really terrific. So I assume they're celebrating down at the state capitol today. They must be celebrating, right?
I'm sure they're celebrating with a large amount of political fundraisers. But no, look, I don't think anyone's that happy about the setup right now. People are still talking, but the conversations have not always seemed productive. I literally caught up with Matt Bradford, the House Democratic leader, who said, you know, I asked him, are talks productive? He said, some days, kind of shrugged and walked away. But he said, talk about the state budget was better than talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, wherever the heck that's worth. You know, where we're at is it's 100 days late because there's just deep disagreements between Senate Republicans who are worried about the state's long-term financial health, and then House Democrats and Governor Josh Pirro is also a Democrat over what needs to be spent on now because, you know, the state has a good amount in savings, about $11 billion in cash reserves. Those were built up during the pandemic because there were more tax returns than expected, and the federal government was putting a lot of money into states. That money's still there, but if you use it for recurring expenses, you know, like putting more money in, always a need in the state, especially as the population gets older. If you put it into education, public education, if you put it into transit, if you put it into any of the many, many things that are needed, that isn't just a one-off investment. It's not just, you know, buying a house with cash. It's like paying a mortgage. It needs consistent revenue to cover it. And this difference over how much can we actually spend right now to cover our costs in the future is what's driving this 100-day impasse now. And the problem is we're at the point where it's starting to really have an impact on people who rely on state funding, and there are a lot of them.
Well, I'm going to ask about that a little bit later on. Let me get this dumb question out of the way, because I'm good at those. We've mentioned a mountain of times about the June 30th law that says the state budget's supposed to be passed by June 30th. Is anybody down there, like, thinking, let's just rescind this law because it's the most pointless law out there? It never hits. Just get rid of the doggone thing. I mean, there's no penalty, right, for missing the June 30 deadline?
The penalty is only to people who rely on the constant state appropriation, like the law actually getting signed that says money goes here, money goes there. So mostly contractors, nonprofits, schools, counties, things like that. State employees are still going to be paid. That includes elected officials and their staff. Things like state parks are still going to run, corrections offices and jails, they're still going to be running and open, obviously. You know, state police are still going to be out there patrolling. Where it hurts is the people who, like, basically are forced to, people who take on state contracts for a lot of the nuts and bolts of government, mental health, addiction treatment, foster care, you know, road contracts, on and on and on. Like, that's where you kind of start to see it, is in these things that, you know, all the other ways that government helps us. Those are the people who are struggling right now.
Now, if I'm correct, Stephen, this week, finally, all of the legislators are at work in Harrisburg. They're all there, House, Senate, although for what, the Senate was out for weeks or something?
Everybody made it back from the Steelers game in Ireland, did they? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Nice to have
everyone
them back.
Made it back in one piece, as far as I can tell.
Fantastic.
Are they all back at work, allegedly, this week? Is that accurate?
So everyone's in Harrisburg. I mean, what I want to say, too, is that, like, budget deals are negotiated by about 10 people. I could rattle them off by name. They might not always appreciate that. But we're talking, look, the top legislative leaders, the governor, the majority leader in the Senate, majority leader in the House, and their top staff. That's pretty much the people in the, you know, room where it happens. Then, other than that, your rank-and-file lawmaker, unless they are that leader, doesn't have much to say besides waiting for a deal to be cut and for it to be brought in front of them and close to a meeting and say, we have a deal, vote for it or don't. And obviously, if you're cutting that deal, you're hoping everyone's going to vote for it. So I say all this to say that, like, you know, everyone's there. There's no reason these conversations couldn't happen over a Zoom room or everyone meeting in, you know, a clandestine pub in the center of the state. I don't know, State College, Pennsylvania. But, you know, so yeah, everyone's in Harrisburg, but there is no requirement everyone's in Harrisburg to get stuff done. I mean, I can tell you the main thing is there are going to be 20-plus legislative fundraisers in Harrisburg this week, though, because everyone's there and so are the lobbyists.
Steven, do they still have smoke-filled rooms? Allegedly, that's where a lot of deals get made, smoke-filled rooms. Do they have those?
Well, you know, smoking indoors is prohibited in many parts of the Commonwealth. But look, that's to say, I think the proverbial smoke-filled room, I can think of one or two that I know people will meet, you know, to keep things private in the Capitol. But with that said, you know, that's like, those sort of conversations are just happening all the time. And I think the hardest part is that, like, people are chatting, but there's just been no results from it. The pressures on everyone are pretty immense. And I think the other thing is, too, I've been starting to think about this as, like, you know, we think of everything as Democrat versus Republican. But Governor Josh Shapiro has even said, he's almost framed it as a three-party negotiation, where it's like, oh, I am playing shuttle diplomacy, going back and forth between Leader Pittman, the Republican leader in the Senate, and Leader Bradford, the Democratic leader in the House, and I'm trying to get them to work together. So with that said, I think when you think about it as like a three-party negotiation, where, yeah, Democrats are, you know, Democrats together, but they want different things, that's the way I've been thinking about it, which kind of adds, I think, to some of the why it's there. And then we can get into Senate Republicans, and the main thing I'd say there is just there's really deep ideological divisions within that caucus. You have people who say if we spend a dollar more than last year's budget, we are betraying our constituents alongside their hope for, like, school vouchers. I think there are other Republicans who are willing to cut a deal if, you know, what was put in front of them, but bridging those divides is also really difficult.
All right, now you touched on this a little bit ago, but let's go over it again. What are, and there's a lot of issues, what are the big ones? What are the key issues? You mentioned far apart, two sides. What are the key issues that have been holding things up now for 100 days? And you can go as long with that list as you want. Go right ahead.
I mean, I think it really all has to come down to spending. And under that umbrella, though, what you put is you put, how much is the state spending on Medicaid? How much is the state spending on public education? And should that money be spent differently? How much is being spent on public transit? You know, public transit agencies have been saying that, including from SEPTA in Philadelphia to CATA in Center County to the PRT out in Pittsburgh, they've been saying that they don't have enough money, that they, because of changing patterns, that they're going to hit a fiscal cliff and have to cut services. You know, schools have, there's a court ruling saying that there's a court ruling that says schools need more money, especially poor districts that don't have a big property tax base. You know, that was in 2023. They got some money last year, but there are people who always say public school needs more money. And then you also, like, when it comes to Medicaid, obviously there's been big federal changes on that front. People, like, insurance is getting up there. More people are falling back on the federal option of Medicaid, you know, as a dual program between both the federal government and the state government. And, you know, it always has more money. Also, Ozempic is on there. That's an expensive drug, but also it's a drug that, you know, gives people better outcomes. Is it worth in the long run? These are all, like, debates that people are having over what's the right amount. Governor Shapiro proposed about $51.5 billion in his opening budget. Last year it was about $47.3 billion, maybe it was $6 billion. You know, that's a 8% increase or so. Is 8% too much? That's kind of the question. And then the other option is, when you do a budget talk, is if you're spending more money than some people want, what else do you add to the pot to make everyone happy? You know, it's a deal. Maybe some people are okay with more spending if you say, you know, implement school vouchers, you know, money for kids to go to private school. Does that win people over? Then you got to convince the other side, Democrats, that that's okay. And then, you know, you're kind of almost like back to square one if that does it. And just repeat that over and over and over again.
Stephen, there are a lot of needs out there. There's no question. I've been asking this of legislators when we have them in, our local legislators. I'm genuinely curious. I'm pretty sure I know the answer. But are you aware of any organization, like one, that gets money from the state government that's like, you know what, you could actually, we're good, you could actually reduce what you've been giving us for the upcoming year. Our expenditures last year were a little less than what we anticipated. We're good, just give us a little less and we'll be just fine. Is there any organization out there that you're aware of that's like, that's even okay with just let's do exactly what we did last year? Or is every organization that gets funding from the state, and I'm not faulting, again, costs are going up, I get it. I'm just genuinely wondering, is there any organization that you're aware of that's like, you know what, we're good, just give us a little less than you did a year ago?
I mean, look, I'm not aware of the budget requests of every single organization. With that said, I'm going to go back to, inflation is hard. A lot of things have been flat-funded. Mental health, for instance, got a big cut under former Governor Tom Corbett when Republicans were trying to balance state's budget. And that was never restored. So we have mental health agencies using basically the same level of funding they had about 14 years ago, 12 years ago. Think about how much inflation's eaten into people's pockets in the last 5 years. Imagine you're still trying to get by on what you were making in 2012. And that's mental health. Definitely, I don't know of anyone who's specifically saying, oh, we can get by with the same amount of money or less.
Yeah.
But I also don't know if, who does that? Nobody goes into a salary discussion and, says, no, you don't have to pay me more money. Part of that is just, that's how you negotiate.
Sure. I just was just wondering. Pretty sure I knew the answer. Just wondering.
Yeah, the answer is none.
Well, and listen, it is interesting because there has been a lot of attention, and I would argue a lot of lip service. My full disclosure, most of our audience is aware of this, but my wife runs a nonprofit that deals with mental health with young people locally, and it is. Pretty remarkable to me, and I've seen some of this up close and personal. You don't find anybody that says, "Nah, don't worry about mental health. We don't need to worry about that." But and just the opposite, most people are like, "Yeah, man, we've got to do something to address it. All right, let's get some funding."
Mm-hmm. I mean,
hello, anybody? No, I'm busy telling you how concerned I am about mental health. Right, but my wife's foundation happens to provide all of the programs for free. They do a bunch of teaching programs. Mm-hmm. They work with the kiddos themselves. They put on a bunch of free classes and opportunities and all of this stuff. And again, you go around, oh, yes, man, you're doing great work. It's very important. We could use some funding. Well, we think what you're doing is really important. Yep, and we could use. No, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, with all of this stuff, I get it. There's a lot of stuff out there, and we are limited in how much I think we can go after taxpayers. It's why I'm a big fan. I wish we would really start to do some more creative stuff, maybe give some tax breaks here and there, and instead of having companies and corporations give to the government via taxes, say, hey, why don't you just directly earmark X amount of money that normally would have been collected by the government and earmark it to some sort of, good work being done in your community and take out that middleman of the government, which inevitably cuts significantly the money that it gets returned to the nonprofits from the original source. Your thoughts on the overall process and trying to prioritize.
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. One, the state does do something similar to what you're saying with school choice, with private schooling. There's the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, EITC, that the state has. Actually, the federal tax bill that was passed under Trump implemented a national version of this. And what this does is basically say if you are a rich person or LLC or, something that fits into the right accounting profile. Please don't make me try to describe that further. I will fail. If you give money to a private school scholarship fund or, a qualifying group, you can get a tax break for it. So we've done some programs like that. The state does that. Usually gets criticized because when you allow for it to be just the government gives you a tax break for your own private giving, it's harder to hold it accountable. Of course, you can make the same argument that the government occasionally is hard to hold accountable. I'm sure folks have encountered that. But with that said, on the question of budget priorities, on mental health, budgeting is all about priorities. If everything's a priority, nothing is a priority. That's a trite phrase, but what I happen to agree with. And, one thing I'd point out is this isn't exactly a budget line, but the state has about $300 million or so into gambling revenues, if I'm remembering it correctly, that goes directly to horse racing. It helps fund purses for anyone who races a horse in Pennsylvania. And now we could sit here and be like, well, that's, you know, there are a lot of, that elicits a lot of response from people. But the thing is like, horse racers have a lobby, and they have a story to tell. And their story would be, this is subsidizing horse farmers who are all over the state. And they're the ones who, you know, raise the horses, tend to the horses. There is an industry behind that. So at some point, I think, there just has to be a conversation of, like, if the government is going to take tax money and put it somewhere, is that the best use of it? And let everyone have an open debate over it. But that's not usually how things work.
Stephen, what exactly is the governor's role here? All right, he had a budget idea way back when. What is he doing anything right now, or is he just kind of essentially sitting back, okay, guys, you finish, I'll sign it, come on, let's go. What's his role right now?
So the most charitable interpretation would be, you know, the governor's job is to introduce a budget, which he did in February, and it's been 200-some days since then. Then his plan didn't get a vote. There is this process that's been in place in Harrisburg where, like, the governor has his address, then there are budget hearings where people talk about it. They, like, you know, interview slash interrogate the governor's staff about all the details of it. They raise concerns. They say what they like. A bit of political theater, never hurt anyone. Then there's supposed to be closed-door talks where everything gets passed by June 30th. Obviously, that process has not worked. Has not worked in a couple of years. Like, in the way it's supposed to. So, you know, what the governor would say is that he's done his role historically. His people have shown up at the table. I see his legislative staff running around. You know, I know he meets with people semi-regularly, top lawmakers. So, like, you know, the question could be, what else could he do? At some point, the legislature has to legislate. Definitely something I hear. The legislature's on track to not pass that many laws, as per usual, and the governor's on track to not sign a lot. Again, as per usual in recent years. But then on the other side of it, you know, I've had some lobbyists say they think the governor should be more involved, that, like, the governor's role in a negotiation when it goes south like this is to basically lock everyone in the room and say, we're not leaving until we agree to something, and use the force of their position and their status, their bully pulpit, to just, you know, kind of bang on a table and say, this is what we're doing. Get everyone in line. I think part of the reason that's not happening is in 2023, his first budget, Senate Republicans had the assumption he would do that to pass school vouchers. That didn't happen. In fact, he ended up vetoing money for school vouchers within that budget deal when House Democrats expressed their displeasure with it and basically told him, we're not going to vote for it. So, you know, I think that that has sort of left a blanket of mistrust on negotiations that's really hard to counteract. Especially once you get to 100 days, because at this point, everyone recognizes the cost of a no budget, but getting people to budge is an entirely different conversation.
All right, Stephen, I'm blanking. I should know this. 100 days is a lot. This has gone longer. Yeah. What's the record for the longest wait before a new budget finally showed up?
Don't ask me to turn in the days. So I guess if I did it once, it'd probably be like 220 or so days. It was, I believe, Governor Tom Wolf, at least in modern years, Governor Tom Wolf's first budget wasn't signed. The budget address is in, that would have been March of 2015. I don't think he signed the final legislation until March of 2016. So again, it was starting in June 30th, if you get what I'm saying. Just like about 200 days, about 7-8 months.
Oh my Lord. Okay. Let's see. I've got a story here. The Altoona Mirror has a story. The Altoona School District, if something doesn't happen, could run out of money by the end of November. And apparently, if that would happen, they'd either have to take out a loan or liquidate some of their assets. In other words, sell stuff so that they've got some money. Now, I don't know if this was you or where I saw this. All right, Stacey Garrity is the state treasurer. She also happens to be a Republican candidate for governor next year. Can she just, she's the state treasurer, can she loan money? Is she allowed to do that as the state treasurer? Are you familiar with this? I'm just wondering, yeah. She might try to do something here. What could she do?
So she did announce about I want to say a couple weeks ago that she was starting a program to specifically try and lend money. She capped the program originally at $500 million to counties and Head Start. So, you know, that's, you know, like pre-K programs, child care programs for pre-kindergarten kids. And that the idea being because what that school district, Altoona School District, is dealing with, this idea of, well, we got to, like, liquidate assets or we have to, like, take out debt. You know, the other option is cuts of schools, you know, again, harder for them to fire off teachers when you got a set number of kids that need to be taught. Like, your options are, if you're an agency that depends upon state dollars and you're not getting it, is that, you know, go in the debt, use up your reserves, make cuts. The Garrity announced this program. I would say it's now become a political firecracker because there is debate over, can she do this legally? And then there's debate over, you know, why is she doing this when effectively I've had one nonprofit operator actually tell me they saw it as just the state treasurer playing loan shark. Because when you think about it, like, the loan is only being made of money that would just be appropriated to these very agencies in a normal budgetary process. All Garrity is doing is giving it to them early at interest, because it would be a 4.5% interest, and, like, the state doesn't comp anyone. Well, my understanding is that the state comps very, very few people for interest on late payments. Like, if you're a mental health operator and you have a contract with the state and the state falls behind, the state isn't giving you the back pay plus interest. Like, most people are required to do when we go in the debt, if we go in the debt. Like, you know, that time value of money's not caught. So all this is to say, Garrity has announced this program. The main question is, I mean, she put interest on that about 4.5%. I think that's right around the Fed baseline. So, you know, good market value, but at the same time, it's still interest. And the main argument she told me when I asked her is, like, she can't do it interest-free because of state law. There's legislation from Senate Republicans to get rid of that, to allow her to go interest-free on these loans. But again, I mean, Senate Democrats came out and said, this is all political posturing. What we need to do is pass a budget. Like, this is, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. This is being penny wise or pound foolish and fit, whatever, you know, phrase you'll want to use. But that, and they questioned the legal authority because in 2015, during that really long impasse I mentioned, the treasurer kicked around doing this. And I think there was one legal ruling at the time or just pamphlet that said they can't loan anything. Obviously, Garrity has gone ahead. I don't know if anyone's suing over it yet, but the main point is, I would just go back to this question itself has become political, especially given the fact that Garrity is running against Governor Josh Shapiro.
Very interesting. I'm sure the timing is just an accident. Real quick, before we take a break, Stephen, use your crystal ball. Is this thing going to get solved anytime soon?
The people I talk to are not optimistic.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to elaborate much more, but I'll tell you that the people I talk to are very much not optimistic. I've heard December thrown around. And even then, that feels generous.
Oh, I think they can set the record, Stephen. I think we can go into the
into the.
And people say we don't do big things in America.
I'm telling you.
We can set records.
Oh, boy. All right, we're going to take a break. Stephen,
record-setting performance by our state legislature. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for the good folks.
That's a record we don't want.
No.
Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA is our guest. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Stephen, I want to ask about these judge elections, which my mailbox is too full of these postcards now. All right, this is like a year ago. I thought we were done with that.
Getting a couple of postcards myself.
Yeah, you're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.7 The Fox. We will come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Kevin Harlan here from Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Join us all season long for primetime action on the road to the playoffs and Super Bowl 60. Each week, Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner and I will have the call of great matchups, along with Mike Golick, senior and junior, in the studio. Don't miss out on the great NFL tradition that is Monday Night Football.
Catch all the action all season long. Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you, and we will have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of today's big show.
Again, we're talking with Stephen Caruso from Spotlight PA, covers Harrisburg, the legislature, and some other things. SpotlightPA.org is their website. Again, these folks do great work. I'm a supporter and have been for a number of years. You guys keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great stuff. Although, now, Stephen, I follow you on X Twitter. I call it X Twitter, where apparently your name right now is Stephen Scaruso.
Yes, boo. It's October. It's Halloween month. Okay. It's scary.
Okay, it's very interesting. Now, you had a post yesterday. I got to ask you about this post. Like, okay, why? Your post yesterday, you said, two Amtrak police officers at 30th Street Station, that's in Philadelphia, with a two Amtrak officers with a police dog in tow, just went down a bench full of people, asking them to show tickets and then their destination if they didn't have one. Stephen, what the heck is this? What was that?
I believe 30th Street Station is trying to implement a policy to keep houseless people out and keep people from sitting on benches for too long. There are announcements that say, you know, you can only sit for 2 hours or so. I believe this was that attempt. It's just something I've been keeping an eye on now. It was very, I'll just say, it was very jarring to be, you know, I was standing in line waiting for my morning train and to watch. I think in general, look, you know, asking to show tickets, then, like, asking people who, you know, what their destination is. That one, that was fascinating to me. I haven't seen that in America yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way it's described, I'm like, okay, this sounds a little shady, all right? Very, because I've been to 30th, I've used the train, I've been to 30th Street Station. I'm like, who are these people just sitting around? All right, very interesting. Okay, the Supreme Court elections are suddenly interesting, which we don't normally say. These are, again, these are retention elections. So there are three members of the state Supreme Court who happen to all be Democrats, and you're supposed to go and say, yes, I want them to serve another 10 years, or no, I don't want them to serve anymore. And there's been, I think I've received five of these mega postcard things here in my mailbox. Stephen, in your experience, have you ever seen a judge election this, I'll call it politicized, because I don't recall. Maybe I've forgotten.
Well, I think what's different is seeing a retention election politicized. So how we choose judges in Pennsylvania, both on the county level and at the statewide level, is they run in partisan elections, Democrat versus Republican. Those are open seats. They get elected. Whoever wins gets 10 years on the court. And at the end of 10 years, they have to stand for retention election, where it's supposed to be a nonpartisan election on the merits of the judge's legal decision, legal thought process, how well they have followed the law. And that is just a yes or no decision. You're not supposed to be, you know, supposed to be, if you talk to the legal scholars who've kind of, you know, we'll talk about this process, like, this is supposed to be about the merits of them as a judge itself, not on their party. Of course, I think, as we've all been living through the last at least 10 years where courts have mattered a lot, court decisions have mattered a lot, the courts have been increasingly politicized, I think that's an increasingly hard decision. But all of this is me to say, I mean, there have been at least $20 million spent on individual state court races when it's an open seat, D versus R, looking at 2021 or 2023 when there were individual seats up on the court. Now, having these retention questions politicized like this, particularly by big money groups, that is brand new, and it has scared the heck out of a lot of people who do follow judicial goings-on.
Okay. Now, let's see. Scott here. I'm a registered Republican, so I get all these cards in my mailbox. Apparently, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund has a lot of money, and they're spending it. Yeah, it's a pack on these big cards. Stephen, should I assume, have you seen these cards? Have you seen this stuff?
I haven't seen every single one. I do keep a running tally as best I can of the ones I get pictures of or the ones that show up to my own household. As you know, I am a registered voter too. Sorry, I hope that's not too far for me to say that I do vote. And with that said, like, we, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund is part of a network of political groups. Some of them are nonprofit dark money groups. Some of them are PACs where you can go trace their money, like where it comes from. That's been heavily funded by Jeff Yass. He's a billionaire. He's Pennsylvania's richest resident. He's done it off of stock trading and options and things like that. In general, they support pretty conservative candidates, but they will support some Democrats from time to time, usually on the issue of school choice, which I mentioned. For Democrats, there's always going to be a ton of spending on these races from the trial bar. You know, their interest is in a court that's friendly to, you know, civil lawsuits. You know, this is medical malpractice. This is the lawsuits usually advertised on TV, on billboards, you know, hit by a big truck, call me. And then also labor unions. They put a lot of money into this. The court's, you know, final arbiter on some issues that relate to, you know, unemployment compensation, laws around, you know, prevailing wage, laws around a lot of things. So, you know, and then on top of that, just because courts are so powerful these days, when in particular on things like election law, on things like redistricting, you know, everyone who has an interest in the balance of power, they're pouring money into this. I mean, you know, or abortion, for instance, lots of money that backs, you know, pro-abortion causes have gone to the vote yes to support the Democratic candidates, you know, but also Republicans are putting a lot of money in on the vote no side because they want to control the top court again. This court was controlled by Republicans until 2015 when these three judges flipped it. And, you know, controlling redistricting, how the lines are drawn, controls power. And if you control the court, you really have an upper hand in the redistricting process.
I guess, Stephen, I'm just, you know, these postcards, of course, have all the buzzwords, progressive, woke, you mm-hmm. know, all these buzzwords. And they make claims about, I guess, rulings that that the court has made and so on. I guess I just simply like to know, are these claims accurate? I don't know if you, you have anything on that?
I mean, I can't vet every single claim made, but look, there's one I'll really point to, and you brought up Commonwealth, I can't remember if it was Commonwealth Leaders or Commonwealth Partners, both of which are separate groups, but part of the same umbrella I mentioned. They put out a mailer that said the liberal Democratic court gerrymandered the congressional map, and it included a picture of a old congressional map of Pennsylvania. The problem was, is the way if you looked at it, you would think, oh, wow, that map is ugly. That looks gerrymandered. You know, when you just see a map and the lines go here, there, everywhere, and you're just like, well, this is clearly some attempt to just, you know, put all the voters who like one guy in one place. That was the map they tossed out as unconstitutional, arguing it wasn't unconstitutional gerrymander. The map they implemented doesn't look like that. The map that they got rid of, the ugly one, the one that many people have just seen it and said, I know what that is, that's a gerrymander, that was drawn and by the Pennsylvania General Assembly in 2011, received bipartisan support. It was drawn by Republicans, but some Democrats were in their support, then signed by Governor Tom Corbett. And the map, that was a 13-5 map when it was tossed out. 13 Republicans to 5 Democrats. And that's a pretty crazy result when you think about how Pennsylvania is a state that historically swings a lot. And then the new map that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court implemented was 9-9. Now, there is a legal conversation that can be had about if the court went too far in implementing their own map. One Democratic judge at the time, not someone up for retention, but he was a Democratic judge, I believe it was Max Baer, actually didn't side with the rest of his colleagues in saying that the court could implement its own map, which is what they did. They cited the impasse by then-Governor Tom Wolf and the Republicans. So, like there is that. That's an actual conversation we could have, but that's not what the ad was saying. That was just saying, this is the gerrymandered map the court did, which is just patently false. That is not the map. And again, gerrymandered has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. I think in general we can say is mailers flatten conversation. There is no nuance in a political mailer. The job of a political mailer is to get you really pissed to make you vote one way or the other. And that is not what anything in this race is really going to be trying to do. It's going to start a nuanced conversation. It's all going to be trying to just get people to go out and vote in an election they don't often think about.
Stephen, you can't see it, but there it is. I've got the card with the map on it. So, yeah, I got one of those, too. There it is. And the first time I saw this card, I'm like, now, wait a minute. That doesn't look right. And I had to look it up, what the current map is. And I'm thinking, okay, this is somebody trying to mislead somebody. That's old news right there. What the heck? Now, there are 7 members of the state Supreme Court. We've got these 3 who are up for retention. Stephen, from your knowledge, let's say all 3 lose in a month. Let's say they all, they all lose. All right, first off, what happens then? And second, will it really make a difference? In other words, would there really be a change?
So if all 3 lose, they will immediately leave the state Supreme Court. It will be down to 4 members. It would be tied 2-2. So that means already you're going to have a Supreme Court that's limited in its ability to make rulings, it potentially deadlocks the court on some really weighty questions. You know, obviously they could try to come to some middle ground on things, but that alone I think is concerned some people. Those 3 could be replaced midstream if Governor Shapiro could find a deal with the Republican State Senate to put 3 placeholders on the court. I mean, given we just spent about, 20 minutes talking about how we don't have a state budget, I'll leave that to your listeners to decide they think that's possible. And then in 2027, which is the next year, there'll be a judicial election. There will then be 3 open seats on the ballot that will be run partisan races, D versus R, like we're traditionally used to, just, you get to choose between them. So that's kind of what the case would be. The way it's been put to me is that some court observers are concerned that losing those 3 justices would really hobble the court's ability to make decisions. If that's the case, I think that's like I am not a legal scholar. I think that in general is something to keep an eye on. And either way, whatever happens in November is an attempt to like play a long game about 2027.
All right, okay, hold on. Let's see if I understand this right. If all 3 lose next month, they're out immediately. There's no grace period or something. They're out.
January 1st. They'll have 2 months to pack up their things and make sure their office is cleaned up.
But then there, unless a deal is made, and yes, we were all giggling and chuckling about that, the state Supreme Court would only have 4 members until 2027. The next election.
Technically January 2028, again, if you really want to be technical, but yes.
So that would be a 2-year period with correct. Only 4 justices on the Supreme Court instead of 7.
Correct.
Wow. Okay, so I haven't seen anything about that. Stephen, I'll be honest.
Lawyers don't like to speculate.
Yeah, on the show here, I've shared, I'm uncomfortable voting for judges. It's not like a politician. I promise this. I'll give you this. I'll promise that. That's not what a judge is supposed to do. Has anybody ever down there discussed alternate ways to choose judges other than elections? Because it just...
It's never been a good fit for me. Why are we voting for judges? Has anybody ever discussed an alternative way to do this?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's a conversation that's had semi-regularly. The main alternative, I should say, Pennsylvania system is fairly unique in terms of the exact structure of partisan races and then retention races, but we're not the only state to elect judges. Many do. But with that said, there's a conversation around, it's usually known as merit selection. It's somewhat similar to what the Supreme Court of the United States does, or federal judges writ large. The main difference is that, well, that is entirely up to the discretion of the president to appoint judges. In merit selection, the governor oversees a august committee of legal minds, supposed to be, you know, made up of appointees from both parties, who will vet people and then put them up. And then the governor chooses from a short list made by this commission, and then puts it to the Senate to confirm them. So it adds a bunch of, you know, choke points that are just meant to kind of weed out anyone but, you know, what is seen as a, anyone who's seen but like a strong legal mind who could sit on the court. Look, and the pushback on that is always going to be, though, like, who sits on these commissions? You're you know, it's a decentralized, it's a centralized process, you know, that is, you know, deferring the people's power, so to speak, to elected officials. Yes, we live in a republic. We live in a, you know, a representative democracy where that's their job. But, you know, the alternative take is that judges make rulings that impact our lives every day. COVID shutdowns were backstopped by judges, including federal and state. They, you know, the three judges who are on the court all, you know, struck down an attempt by Senate Republican or red state Republicans writ large to end Governor Tom Wolf's COVID powers prematurely. There was also, you know, they've made rulings on redistricting, on election law. They've backstopped Act 77, the mail-in ballots, the mail-in ballot law from legal challenges. They threw out Donald Trump's attempts to, you know, overturn the 2020 election. Like, these judges, and abortion too, and then I could keep going on. All of this to say, judges make big way decisions. So the alternative take on that is just, you know, I understand if it makes some people uncomfortable. Judges are occupy this interesting position in the way we view authority, I think, in America. But also, like, if they're making decisions on these big weighty issues, let alone deciding the fate of someone who just got called in for shoplifting, shouldn't we vote on that? Is that something people should have a say on? Again, I think that's a very open conversation that it is hard. I don't think it has an easy answer. And the people who defend judicial elections are usually the ones who go more on that populist side of the equation. Like, no, it's important to protect our voters' right to make a decision. You know, or the other way you could put it, it's important to affect the 20% of voters who turn out these elections' right to make a decision when they've got a lot of ads from big money political groups that throw a bunch of mailers at them. Potato, potato. Maybe I'm too cynical.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wonder how many, I also feel uncomfortable because I try to keep up on this stuff, but I'm like, I don't know. Sounds like,
oh, it's hard.
I can't delve into every case, and yeah, I'm not sure how much to trust some of the literature, and yeah, I want people that are just interpreting the law the way it should be interpreted, and even that then leads to, well, this is how it should be interpreted. Mm-hmm. This is how it,
I mean, in 2023,
with electing, but yeah, I'm not sure there's a better alternative.
I don't know. Go ahead,
Steven. In 2023, I was reading court cases on eminent domain and municipal firings from a Montgomery County judge who Republicans nominated to be their Supreme Court nominee. Like, and I was trying to discern from these decisions, what could I tell people about their judicial philosophy? I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I tried my best. It's hard. I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't think, like, I'm not trying to say the legal profession is beyond all any of our minds. You know, I think people can figure out a lot of stuff for themselves with the right resources and the right, you know, and a little bit of time. But at the same time, though, like, you know, reading tea leaves of one decision to get to another, very hard for anyone to do. And I'm, you know, a journalist who spends way too much time thinking about state government.
Sometime we could do a whole show on eminent domain too. Opinion here that the abuses that governments have had regarding eminent domain is infuriating to me. But that's neither here nor there right now. But
all right. Well, Stephen, we appreciate your time this morning, folks. Again, website spotlightpa.org
or a lot of, you know, news outlets carry Spotlight PA stories. You see the little tagline there. Again, Stephen, you guys are doing great stuff. You're covering stuff that other folks are not covering, and that's what I like. And please keep doing what you're doing, and we'll catch you another time.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to talk whenever.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stephen. All right. Appreciate the time.
No, he's terrific.
He really is.
And on X Twitter, Stephen Scaruso, apparently for the rest of October.
I love it.
I like a good sense of humor. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll have a few minutes of open line time if you'd like to chime in. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We'll be right back.
We don't just talk sports, we live it. Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Be a part of the best event of the winter, Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with sci-fi and fantasy fans from across the region. If you're a vendor of anything looking to reach this energized audience, open space is currently available. Go to happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the vendors tab for information. Reserve your space today and get ready for a weekend of action and profit. Happy Valley Comic Con.com. Click on the vendors tab. Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-Ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Join us for the Goon and Ironhead Show, Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Goon loves Philadelphia sports. I love Pittsburgh sports. We both love Penn State sports, and we both just like talking sports, and you never know where the discussion will take us. That's part of the fun. Join us for the good times, Tuesday and Thursday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
You know, a hotel's just a hotel, but a house is a home. Decorated to perfection with pride, love, and attention to detail. That's what you'll experience when you stay at the Keller House. A delightful 1887 home in the village of Center Hall, Pennsylvania. The Keller House is not just a bed and breakfast. The moment you open the door, you'll be amazed at the historic, unique, cozy feel of this beautiful Victorian home. The Keller House is just minutes away from State College. So if you're going to the game, turn your trip into a mini vacation. The Keller House Bed and Breakfast. Oh, did I mention the delicious homemade cooked breakfasts? So good. Plus, you can choose from one of five themed bedrooms, each with its own bathroom and a central sitting room downstairs. Wireless high-speed internet is also provided. So, whether you're by yourself or bringing the whole family, the Keller House Bed and Breakfast in Center Hall will be your home away from home. KellerHouseBB.com. That's KellerHouseBB.com. 109 West Church Street, Center Hall.
It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. A few minutes remaining, and the phone line is open and available for your use at 814-954-7266.
A quick reminder of sorts. Our website, 987thefox.info. We have the Let's Talk interviews page. We'll be posting today's show probably in the next hour or so. And I usually carve out, if we do an interview with somebody, I have a separate link if that's what you want to listen to, that in particular. So we'll have our chat with Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA on a separate link that you click on about the budget, about these judge elections and so on. Election Day, 4 weeks from yesterday, and I'm starting to see the yard signs popping out of the ground, you know, here and there and everywhere. Again, folks, please, off your election. No, no, no. Okay? Township supervisor people, school board people, very important positions involving your money. Some other, you know, borough council and stuff like that, or mayor, you know, depending on where you live and so on. Very important elections. All right, now here's one. I got this postcard yesterday. Katie Oliver is a local judge. A court of common pleas. She started 10 years ago. Same rules apply. 10-year retention election. And so there was a card that I got in my mailbox for her yesterday. It's like, yes, she should keep serving, or no, she shouldn't. All right. So, I mean, there is an important role. The big difference, these other cards, this one comes from a political action committee. At least this one, it says clearly paid for by the candidate. Okay, good. And this is from her in this particular case. So, again, there's a lot of important elections coming up in 4 weeks. If you have a mail-in ballot, okay. Scott here, I've mentioned, I'm not a fan of mail-in ballots. Go to the polling place on election day like we've always done. And then we don't have the questions, well, did I sign this right? Did I put a date on it? Did I not fill this out correctly? All that goes by the boards if you actually show up at a polling place. Just show up. Show your face in the place. But I keep seeing stories, increasing number of mail-in ballots. Okay, all right, that's what some of you folks want to do. I'm not a fan. It's not going away, all right? I wish it would, but it won't. Okay, just go show your face in the place. But that's one man's opinion. Anyway, there we go. Again, tomorrow, Frank Parlato, right?
Yes, he will be here tomorrow.
Okay.
9 o'clock.
We had a little miscommunication. All right, that happens sometimes. Not a big deal. But we're going to talk about the Jerry Sandusky case. New evidence. And I assume Frank knows what it is.
Well, Frank's the one that uncovered. He better know what it is.
Well, then he would know what it is. All right. So he will join us tomorrow during the 9 o'clock hour. One quick thing, just kind of looking ahead to next week.
Yeah.
I'm seeing some stories. There's going to be, I guess you would kind of call it a big event, next Tuesday morning. It's called the Air Service Summit. This involves the CBICC, the local chamber, State College Regional Airport is involved. I think our friends Happy Valley Adventure Bureau, they're involved with this. They're having a big event next Tuesday morning to talk about air service in our area, which is not great right now. We're down to just two airlines at State College Airport. What can be done to change that? So they're doing an event next Tuesday morning. Now, doggone it, they're doing this event while we're doing this show. So that's just bad timing. But the good news is, next Wednesday, Greg Scott, who leads the CBICC, he's going to join us in studio next Wednesday, the day after. We're going to take some time. We're going to talk about air service. The good, the bad, the ugly, all that sort of stuff from their event next Tuesday. We need some, one man's opinion, we need some changes with our air service. I guess what, Oregon? When Oregon was here a couple of weeks ago, they had to fly right into Harrisburg, I think, and had to drive up. I thought we gave up those days with Bear Bryant. I remember 1 year Bear Bryant famously said, why the heck are we flying into Harrisburg and driving 2 hours to State College? That's the best you can do? Now, this was, 45 years ago or some such thing, long time ago. Things have gotten better, but still, we got two airlines at the local airport. We got to do something about that. So that's something to look forward to next week. And then finally, I feel like they're ganging up on me. All right, I go home yesterday. I check my mail.
Oh, boy.
I'm signed up for too many things. All right. And you sign up for maybe one thing, and then other groups find out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then they send you stuff.
I'm now inundated.
Are you ready for this? I'm now getting material from UCLA Health.
Oh, boy.
I'm thinking, what are they, rubbing it in?
That seems,
UCLA
yeah.
Health sends me a mailer. Hey, sign up for this. No. In a word.
Jerks.
No. Not doing that. Anyway, UCLA rubbing it in. Oh, that's really low.
That is.
That's also bad timing. All right, there we go. Hey, we're looking out the window. The sun's coming out. Yay. So much
haunting.
For the gloom. We have raised the gloom.
Yes. Beautiful sunshine out there. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Fox Sports.